Well, so, Steve, here we are to do this delightful thing. On the bike ride over, I was kind of thinking about how 100 years ago or so, futurists of the time thought that we would all have flying cars and robot butlers by now. And I'm still waiting for the robot butler to bring me a drink when I get home. But I was thinking that, you know, for a couple $100, you can pick up a Roomba, which will vacuum your house for you. And in terms of the flying cars, we don't have flying cars yet, but a car with GPS, navigation system,
yeah,
and a Bluetooth headset and heated seats, and it'll even tell you how to park. That's pretty close to flying.
Maybe. Well, and then getting to one of these predictions from 2000, I mean, one of the serious predictions has to do with robots. And maybe this is the later version of the flying car. One of the predictions is robots will surpass human capabilities both mentally and physically by 2050, allowing humans to retire from work forever, predicts robotics expert Hans Moravec. Computer robots already handle most manufacturing jobs, as well as accounting, product design, and other white-collar jobs. Next on robots' to-do list, research and development, engineering, executive decision-making, and building better robots. And I don't know, my reaction is maybe, but you know, people have been talking about robots replacing all of these human functions for so long. And I mean, certainly it's happening on the manufacturing line, but I'm not sure it's going to happen in our personal lives so much.
But I was just reading this thing about Aurora. Maybe you've heard about this. Aurora, this monkey who sits in a lab in North Carolina and with her mind makes a robot on a computer screen in Japan move. So maybe that kind of merging of mind and robot is closer than we thought.
Well, and think about Ray Kurzweil. I mean, the singularity is near. And if you remember the subtitle of his book that came out a few years ago, it was When Humans Transcend Biology. And his whole argument was that we were going to have this fusion of genetics, robotics, and nanotechnology. And it was all going to happen by the year 2045. And
we're getting close.
Yeah, but I'm not sure that's going to happen.
But wait, so what's the singularity? I've never totally gotten
that. The singularity is that there will be this basically fusion of biology, genetics, and computer technology, and it's all going to be boiled down to this, you know, these tiny little things will become super smart, and the human being as we know it is going to kind of disappear. We will become more this cyborg, this melding of human and machine.
Well, that sounds space-agey, but if somebody offered you a chip that could be easily implanted in the back of your brain that would help you remember more, would you say yes or no?
If it was just for that, sure. Memory, absolutely.
I would.
I'd love to have a better memory.
I mean, if I could read twice as fast and remember twice as much stuff, wouldn't you be first in line for the chip?
If there are no side effects, sure.
He's so cautious.
Well, let's get to another one of these predictions here.
I've got one for you.
Okay.
Paperless offices. Supposedly, paper consumption will continue to rise in industrialized countries through 2010. Oh, so they're predicting that, in fact, we won't have paperless offices. Well, clearly they have seen your office, Steve. You must have an entire forest worth of paper
right.
in there.
Yes, I am not a friend to the world's trees, unfortunately. I mean, the thing about having all this access with computers, at least what I tend to do, is I find all these interesting articles that I wouldn't have had access before to, and I print them out.
Yes, Steve single-handedly keeps an office printer running.
Well, here's one for you, Anne. Reading and writing may soon be passé, and that's a good thing, according to marketing consultant Jeffrey Meredith. Text is outmoded. A total switch to image and/or oral forms of communication will be more in line with the right-brained, intuitive thinking skills necessary for a true knowledge age. Do you think reading and writing have become passé?
No. You know, people have been predicting the demise of the book for more than a decade, at least. I can't even count how many interviews we've done on this subject. But I think I'm right that there are, in fact, more books in print today than there ever have been before. Of course, the delivery mechanism has changed. Isn't this the year that Amazon said their ebook sales had surpassed their print book sales?
I think that is true.
But that's just the delivery mechanism, right? So whether people are reading their Nora Roberts and Stephen King on a paper page or an electronic screen, we're still reading. And I guess I think that's our love of reading and language and stories is hardwired in us, and it would take a couple of millennia to have the left brain devolve.
But maybe the more interesting question, and here's another prediction back from the year 2000, lauded as the key to fast information and knowledge, the internet could actually decrease our thinking skills. Having access to more information does not necessarily give students the critical thinking skills to evaluate that information, and future generations may be more easily led astray.
Didn't I read that in The Atlantic recently?
Well, in fact, there was a few years ago, Nicholas Carr. We interviewed him about his book, The Shallows. I think originally he did that piece for The Atlantic. He was basically arguing that the internet is making us dumber. And his argument is that it's not only causing us to have these quick attention spans, but that actually it's rewiring our brains and that we sort of no longer have the capacity for that kind of sustained long-term thinking.
Yeah, you know, all these trends seem to come down to they're either doom and gloom on the one hand or they're pie in the sky on the other hand. I will say to counter Nicholas Carr, we did an interview recently with Kathy Davidson. She's at Duke. She's the provost who originally one year gave freshmen those iPods. All incoming freshmen got iPods. And so her comment is that, in fact, the internet is making us smarter in so many, many ways. I mean, they saw an explosion of new educational systems that came about of giving all those students the iPods.
Well, and I think one thing that's not really gotten into in any of these predictions is one discovery that really has emerged over the last decade is how plastic our brains are. And so, I mean, there's this question of, is the internet really rewiring our brains? It probably is changing them in some way. And I think more and more neuroscientists are finding that actually, even when we're adults, even when we can be along in age, our brains can keep changing. And it wouldn't be surprising, I think, if technology is part of that.
Okay, Steve, here's one for you. This is from 1999. Is God an evolutionist? Darwin's theory of evolution suggests that all things constantly change. If God is immune to change, then he can't intervene in human affairs, rendering him impractical for people of faith seeking comfort or aid. Future believers may increasingly embrace a relative God who will continually grow and evolve.
I think that prediction is right on the money. For various reasons. One is we hear a lot of talk about people who are, quote, spiritual but not religious. You know, they've kind of left the church that they grew up with, but they still want some sense of spirituality. And so often they are sort of inventing religion on their own terms or, you know, taking a little bit of Buddhism here, a little bit of Catholicism there. And then the big thing that has happened since 2000 is the rise of the new atheists. You know, no one had heard that term really before 9/11, and partly as a reaction to seeing these religious fundamentalists flying planes into buildings in the name of faith. That spurred on this whole new generation of atheism, and atheism is now on the map in ways that it never was 10 years ago.
Okay, well, so here's another one that maybe is not so true. This is also from 1999. Look out, Republicans and Democrats. Young independents are on the rise. Xers are the most likely generation to be registered as political independents. Traditional terms such as liberal and conservative are becoming less meaningful to these individualists who may be conservative on economic matters but liberal on social issues. I don't know. That suggests this sort of gradual coming together, and we've just seen an explosion of political polarization.
Yeah. Well, I would say that's maybe half right. And I think what that prediction was getting at was that people didn't like the established parties so much. Mm-hmm. Probably true. What they kind of miss is how much people distrust government. I mean, no one likes government anymore. And then, of course, the thing that has come out of this, I mean, I'm sure if they were doing this prediction now, that you'd have to reference the Tea Party, you'd have to reference Occupy Wall Street, and, you know, sort of looking at reconfiguring politics in a new way. And sometimes they align with the established parties and sometimes they don't.
Well, read the next prediction.
Okay. A backlash against global institutions may be growing as the world's disenfranchised band together in culturally isolated tribes. Ordinary people are growing increasingly frustrated to see the cultural and political elite benefiting more from development programs and other international aid. Unless the elite improve communications with majorities and share their wealth, clashes are almost certain.
Arab Spring, anyone?
Yes. Right. I think they nailed that one. Yeah.
Okay. Did you have a favorite out of all of these, either that came true or that didn't?
Well, what I find interesting is how, not so much a favorite, but how, if you're thinking back 10 years ago, either what was on the radar or what wasn't. And so one of the ones, I mean, a lot of the stuff about the internet is interesting just because that's always changing. And so there was one about the internet and the media. And because we work in the media, you know, we follow these kinds of things. So the prediction is The internet is changing the very nature of some businesses. For instance, newspapers, once a mass medium, are becoming interactive, allowing individuals to customize their own news package. Newspapers will serve both readers who still want ink and the growing numbers who want links.
Well, that's right, isn't it? Well, I mean, newspapers, print newspapers, have had a terrible, terrible, traumatic last few years. And on the other hand, the newspapers that have survived are increasingly all those old divisions between, you know, print and television and radio are disappearing, so that now you get the Wall Street Journal and the New York Times also have podcasts, also have videos. It's all becoming one thing.
That's true. I'd say what they miss here is how the economic times have changed so that newspapers are collapsing. I mean, basically what they didn't see was that the internet would essentially destroy the ad base, the revenue base for newspapers. And so I think newspapers are an endangered species, but we will see.
So looking ahead quickly, 10 years from now, Steve, do you think public radio will still exist?
Absolutely. And you?
Here's hoping.